taxes, less government, and self-reliance. They live here. Bill Martinez Live.
Hey, we're back with you. 28 minutes before the top of the hour in our conversation with Brian Mark Rigg, the former U.S. Marine Corps officer and historian, author of the new book, Flamethrower, continues right now. Mark, wow, what a contrast here in thinking, you know, and I have to pause and consider for just a moment understanding the culture of the Japanese and their commitment, their religious fervor. For what they believed in and their emperor and that. And as you say, the Americans, even the Germans by comparison, if they lost 30% of their people, it was like, okay, we surrender. The Japanese were so all in that you said in many cases, 98%, it would require that kind of defeat. And that must have been something that Truman was well aware of when he had to make the decision to release the atomic bomb.
Absolutely. You know, when we went in, I mean, to put it in context, Iwo Jima, we lost 7,000 men dead, and we had 19,000 wounded. So with these 26,000 casualties, we suffered more dead and wounded in 36 days on this island than we have in the last 30 years fighting in the Middle East. To put it in context, there was a lot of mothers, fathers, and grandparents that were very upset about this, and when Truman got the information about this, just how radical they were on Saipan, killing their own citizens there, and how radical they were on Iwo Jima and the other islands that we got to, he's like, hell no, am I going to send my boys into Japan when these bombs might bring Hirohito to his knees?
Right.
Because you had 4 million regulars, trained soldiers in Japan, and you had an additional, depending on which documents you look at, an additional 20 to 25 million citizens that were in militias that were all willing to die for the emperor. In fact, children for 8 months leading up to what would have been, the attack would have been trained or were being trained to be suicide bombers in their little school backpacks, no longer having books, but having mines and grenades and bombs attached to them, and they were called Sherman carpets. They were supposed to run underneath the tanks.
Oh.
So you just imagine our boys coming over a hill, and all of a sudden these bright-colored, clothed little kids running over by the thousands to attack them. You can just imagine that psychological problems, and plus having 25 million citizens and 4 million soldiers having a 98% fatality rate. They guesstimated, best case scenario, 800,000 dead and millions wounded. And up to that point, we had only lost 400,000 dead in World War II. So we would have had double the amount
dead. On both fronts?
On both fronts.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
No,
so
this.
Yeah, no doubt Truman made the right decision dropping those bombs. That's the only thing that would have brought Hirohito to his knees, and it did.
You know, Brian, what's most amazing to me when you consider that that kind of rate, 98%, and the commitment they had to the emperor and their fervor as they looked upon him as a god, and they were that committed, it was like, wait a minute, how could anybody survive and be converted? How could people change their minds after being raised, you know, for decades into that kind of fervor and passion? And, you know, what would it take in order for people to, you know, to become reasonable and to become part of a constructive international future?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, in many respects, the bomb helped start that. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the prayer I have every morning when I get up, especially when I was a Marine, is, you know, God, please save me from those who believe in you.
Yeah.
You know, it's because of these religious ideals they had that they were committed to doing this. And just like, you know, a lot of Islamic terrorists believe they have 72 virgins when they die, the Japanese believe that if they killed people and slaughtered them in the name of the emperor, they become gods themselves. So what changed it? Well, defeat was a big help. Bringing democracy to Japan was a big help. And Hirohito, after the war, this is remarkable in the history of religion, renounced 2,600 years of divine lineage. He's the first one in his line that became a mere mortal, and he told everybody in 1946, guess what? I was joking. I'm no longer a god. And it changed Japanese society for the better.
And, of course, reinforced, as you said, when the Japanese experienced the clear differential of Americans' treatment of them versus how they treated even their own people and the Chinese.
Thanks for bringing this up, Bill. I am so proud of our Marines and GIs. My uncle fought on an island right next to Peleliu. And so I'm proud of his service and so on. But when I know what he and his comrades, the GIs, did, and then what our Marines did, especially on Saipan and Tiananmen, you know, when they went in there and there was all these civilians, they did everything they could to help them, to care for them, to give them food. I have several stories in my book of these tough, you know, Marines taking care of little kids. And that's in contrast to what Japan did. Whenever they went into different cities, Shanghai and Nanking and Beijing, they slaughtered the kids. They raped their mother. I mean, there's this one horrible story of this Japanese soldier, and this is just an example of thousands of cases I read about. He's raping a woman, and her five-month-old baby starts crying in the corner. He goes over and smothers the baby, and then goes back and finishes raping the woman, and then he cuts off her head. That's how Japan treated societies. We, in contrast, we brought democracy. We gave them back their country. We took care of the kids. And I am so proud as an American of what we did after World War II. And so coming back full circle to your question, how do you change this radical fanaticism? You give women power, and MacArthur made a good decision allowing women to vote in Japan in 1945 and 46. And you get rid of this theocracy. Religion cannot rule. Separation of church and state, thank God. So religion cannot dictate how people should believe. And you give people some power over their own lives, self-determination. They're not raised in military schools and brainwashed with this ideology. Then you get the thriving democracy that we see now in Germany and in Japan. And this is a gift that we as Americans gave the world. And writing this book about our brother Marines and what they did and the cost that we suffered is something I take great pride in, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to write about this in a book and get it out there for people to learn about this again, because if we don't tell the stories, people will be forgotten.
Without a doubt, and I got to tell you, you have blessed me and other Marines and former Marines richly by the story, because this stuff has gotten lost in translation. You know, I often share with people, my dad was in the European theater. He was a medic in the Army with Patton at the Battle of the Bulge, and we heard little from our dad about what happened. And this is very typical of people who go to war, is they come back, they're very humble, they're reticent to talk about it. It's just an experience they kind of stuff away, maybe because it was so horrific or whatever. But these stories need to be told, Brian. And, you know, thank God for you and what God has blessed you with in your talents and gifts and commitment, you know, to be able to, you know, pass these stories on to us, because you have this sense of pride, you know, as a Marine, as an American, as somebody who believed in democracy at a time, especially in our country, when there's this, you know, this increasing interest in socialism, and you know by instinct that this is not right. But, you know, we need to have these other stories, you know, to come back and to tell and say, are you aware this is what happened? And this is why democracy took a foothold in the East, in Japan specifically, and why they are such a strong ally today.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, one thing I was fascinated by when I did this research, you know, you and I are Marines. Mecca is Iwo Jima.
Yeah.
And this battle is written about, you know, in several books, obviously, and we talk about it all the time in the Corps. What I was horrified by and shocked by is when I went to the personnel files in St. Louis, our National Archives, where all our military personnel files are, almost all the Marines I looked up, and many of them being colonels, even some of the generals that were active on Iwo Jima, Erickson, he should be more famous than Chesty, in my opinion, and I'm trying to do that with my book. These files hadn't been opened since 1945.
Wow.
And I can't tell you how many guys I looked up.
Well, Brian, hey, we've got to go to break. We'll pick it up from there when we come back. More from Brian after this.